Now, what should be done about people begging on our streets? Is it right that police should make arrests, that people even end up in jail? The Nolan Show can reveal this morning that in the last 6 years, from January 2010 to December 2015, 9 people here have been put in prison for begging. It's also been disclosed that there were 113 arrests over 6 years. The figures have been released by the PSNI under a freedom of information request. Let's ask journalists Julia Hartley Brewer and Malachy O'Doherty what they make of this. Good morning to you, Julia. Morning to you, Malachy.
Good morning.
Should they be locked up, Julia?
Look, the reality is begging is an offence, and if you get caught for that offence and go to court, and you get a fine, then if you don't pay the fine, you go to jail. So it is absurd to expect that someone who is homeless on the street to pay a fine, and therefore they will end up in jail. So this isn't picking on beggars, this is just the law operating. But the reality is, different figures for England and Wales. I haven't found the figures for Northern Ireland, but figures actually, only one in five of those arrested for begging were actually homeless in the last year. So there are a lot of people who are begging who are doing it effectively with organised crime and are not actually in need. So actually, yes, I think they should be put in jail.
Malachy?
I think there's a number of issues here. Hello, Julia. First of all, prison isn't a good thing for anything. Prison doesn't help prisoners, it doesn't help the police, it doesn't help staff, it doesn't help society. It's a bad place. Cameron has already acknowledged that by saying that he wants to bring in measures to get governors to have more autonomy. Now, presumably that's inching towards the privatisation of prisons, which would be a bad thing as well. But prisons are filthy, crowded, drug-ridden places which are no good for anybody. So if we want to help people, we don't send them to prison. That would be a starting point for me. The other thing is that when the few cases where prisoners of some value to society is when somebody is so obnoxiously violent and aggressive and such a danger to society that they really have to be contained. That is about the only value that prison has, and that description does not apply to the person who is begging on the streets.
Well, it has a value to the law-abiding public who like to see people punished.
Well, that's true, Stephen. That's true. Yeah, I mean, and if you read the tabloid papers and if you listen to many radio programs and sometimes your own, you will find that there's a powerful instinct within society for people to be penalised, to be punished for criminal or antisocial behaviour. But punishment of itself is of no particular value to anybody.
Yes, it is.
You can punish
that's
a child and just turn into an aggressive child. With the greatest experiment in excessive punishment ever in Northern Ireland society, with the kneecapping of thousands of young offenders, and it didn't do any good for anybody.
Can I just come back on the idea that he said prison isn't a good thing, it doesn't help society. Actually, very good for society when people who do bad things, whether it's stealing or a white collar crime or violence, that they go behind bars, A, to punish them, and B, to deter people. And C, I've got to be honest, I would love if our prisons could turn people around and make them better people. But even if they don't, prisons
don't even try.
It's very good. Well, it seems to me that it's worth spending the money to actually spend a lot more time on actually trying to rehabilitate people. When a huge number of people in our prisons are illiterate and drug addicts, clearly it's going to be very difficult to turn them away from a life of crime if we don't deal with those issues. But the idea that you can't send anyone to prison because it's a bad thing is blatantly nonsense.
You're more likely to become a drug addict in prison than out of it. That's a reality. Every prison is saturated with drugs. You ask any prison governor in the country, you ask the police, you ask anyone who works in the prisons, you ask any prisoner. The places are steeped in hard...
That's an argument.
...more chance of escaping from drug addiction outside prison than in it.
A, most people go in on drugs anyway, and B, that's an argument for getting the drugs out of prison, not sending people to prison. But prison acts as a deterrent. Look, one of the issues, we just go back to the issue of begging rather than prison. The reality is...
Yeah, escape the bit that you can't really deal with, Julia. That's easy.
What's that?
Yeah, escape the part of the question that you can't deal with.
Well, to be fair, we were talking about begging, weren't we? And what do we do about people begging on the street?
Prison, I say, send nobody to prison unless you really have to.
Well, you do really have to. People won't pay fines. The reality is that begging is not necessary in a civilised state, in a civilised country, with a welfare state, for anyone to beg. The people who are begging on the streets are either doing it basically as a con, and we know that the facts are suggesting that people who are begging are not actually homeless, or they are people in desperate need. Now, those people need to be in hostels, they need to be in safe places, in rehab, and if necessary, in prison. Prison is still a safer place to be than living on the street.
Do you give money to people who beg, Julia, or do you walk on?
No, I give money to homeless charities and not to beggars, because, and purely because, the advice of the people running homeless charities, who do know what they're talking about far more than I do, say that actually giving money to beggars helps, does no good to them at all, and means that they're more likely to stay on the street and not seek out the help that they need.
Julia's right to say that there are beggars who are scammers, that they're just basically, it's just, you know, they're not poor, they're not homeless. There's a woman who sits outside the local supermarket here, and she's there every day begging. I wouldn't give her tuppence, you know, but, I mean, she stops you with she gives you a smile, and she tries to charm you and trying to get money off you. And I don't know where she goes home to at night, but I very, very much doubt that she's starving or in need. So I just don't give her anything. That's a common sense response to that. But I've been on this before. I do not want a society in which the law says you cannot help somebody in distress on the street who asks you for help. And that's the reality of begging. There are people, even if it's only a tenth of them, even if it's only a twentieth of them, there are people who you do encounter on the street in a society which is run on food banks, on cut welfare, and which doesn't have the provision for the poor. You will meet people on the street who are desperate. And if they ask you for a quid, I see no reason why you shouldn't give it to them.
Why don't you give, Julia?
Well, because as I've just said, that actually giving somebody who's living on the streets, who is highly likely that, I mean, if they're very young, they may be running away from an abusive home, from sex abuse or physical abuse, if they are, and may well be prey to, easy prey for child traffickers and exploiters. If they're older, it's highly likely they've got alcohol problems, drug problems, depression, mental illness. Giving a quid to someone like that so they can buy themselves another bottle of cider is not helping them. It's actually saying, I feel a bit better about myself. I felt a bit guilty walking past this person who's got a horrible life compared to mine, and now I feel better. Actually, you'd be better off, if you really care about those people, why not say, look, come with me and go and take them and try and get them some help.
Right.
We need to help
people. You're being incredibly presumptuous in telling people that they give money to beggars in order to feel good about themselves. You don't know how I feel when I give money to a beggar. Let me tell you how I feel when I give money to a beggar. I feel that I live in a country which doesn't actually have the safety nets in society that it should have. I feel guilty walking away from somebody who needs help that I haven't the time or money to give them. That's how I feel. I don't know, people don't give money to beggars.
Yes, it makes you feel
and
better.
Smugly seal on feeling good about it.
If you genuinely think that you are doing genuine help for someone who is living on the street with mental health issues, drug problems or whatever, or fleeing an abusive home life, and you think that giving them a quid so that you can then walk on by, if you doing good, then you are living in cloud cuckoo land.
It is sometimes doing good.
Okay, here's John and Dunamina.
The key point for me is that it should not be illegal for a person who needs help to ask for it.
Morning, John.
Good morning, Mr. Noel. I'm just listening there to Julia Hartley Brewer, really. You know, she should be a Conservative MP, really, because what would Julia Hartley Brewer know about having no money or being that far down and you're begging?
What are you trying to say? You're trying to say she's well off?
I'm trying to say, well, she comes across. I don't mean this to be any
You have no idea about her personal financials.
Oh, I'm happy to.
Nor
happy
is it any of your business.
No, I'm happy to answer that. I live a very nice life, thank you very much, and I've been very, very lucky because I had parents who educated me and cared about me, and I think that makes everyone privileged. But I certainly grew up in a family. My dad had to do a tape round, a coal round, and a milk round in the morning to give money to his mum so they could afford to eat. So I don't come from money. I do have family members who know exactly what it's like to live hand to mouth, and that's given me a very strong understanding of it.
Mr. Roll, did you bring me on to make a comment? Did you bring me on to Julie Hartley Brewer to talk over the top of me? What did you do?
Well, you mentioned her. So she's
down my throat. You're a wee bit ignorant of shooting down my throat.
She's
anybody's business. That's all right.
She's allowed to respond.
Well, tell me this. Am I allowed to make my point?
Yes, come on, John.
Or did you not?
Let's make your point.
Okay, then. This is the 21st century, and we have people that are begging for money, for food, and anything else. What does that say about the society we live in? And everybody's banging on to this fresh start. On the mainland, the fresh start has resulted in people taking their own lives. There is a rise in rickets, malnutrition in children, because people have not got enough money to feed themselves because of the welfare reform. And this is the fresh start that has been brought to Northern Ireland. What do you see how many beggars there's in Northern Ireland for? It's all over.
Malachy?
I think your caller's right. I'm sorry I missed your name.
John, it's John and Dunamina.
Dunamana, Mr. Dunamana.
I say Dunamina.
You know, you guys love to pass through it quite often. You're right. We have a society which does not have a safety net. You know, we all aspire to having such a society. That's what the welfare state was for. That's what it was created for. And it doesn't work. And we end up where you have people having to go to food banks to get food to feed their children. We have benefits being slashed for people who can't afford them. We have pensioners who have to make a decision whether to heat their homes or to eat something. And we have other people smugly sailing past us saying, oh, everything's all right. Leave it to the state and leave it to the charities. And that whatever you do, don't be paying any attention to those poor people who are stuck and desperate.
Correct. And another thing, too, you know, they're all banging on about all this welfare reform and how it's working and how it's great and this, that and the other. Look, people don't... Nobody really knows the tsunami that's coming to Northern Ireland. And whenever they come to your door in May, all parties, DUP, Sinn Féin, whatever, Sinn Féin done their best, in fairness to them, Sinn Féin done their best for 6 years. They actually held it back for 6 years. So really, I'm a Protestant person, like, you know, I have to say that Sinn Féin did hold it back for 6 years. So credit to them in that respect. But the DUP and the Ulster Unionists were ready to roll over and basically have this on top of 6 years ago. But it's coming, and people better get ready for it, because there's nobody going to escape. The poor, the disabled, the infirm, all are going to suffer.
The DUP would say that they negotiate the very important mitigations.
Listen, Mr. Nolan, you're right, wouldn't they? Sitting back saying, Mr. Nolan, hold on a minute.
Including no bedroom tax, for example.
Mr. Nolan, let me make my point, please. You're a great man, was sitting back in that chair saying, oh, the DUP would do this, the DUP would
do that. Well, that's my job to do that.
How do you know what they would do? We all know what they've done. They've rolled over.
Well, the bedroom tax was not in Northern Ireland because of what the local political parties did on the ground here.
When Nelson McCausland was the minister in charge of DSD, he wanted to bring the bedroom tax and immediately...
No, he didn't.
He did, and it's there in black and white.
He negotiated.
He negotiated nothing.
Northern Ireland not having to do it.
Sinn Féin put on the petition of concern to block bedroom tax, Mr. Noel. What? Tell me this, are you under the EP's payroll? Are you working for the DUP?
Do you think I'm friendly with the DUP? Do you seriously think I'm friendly with the DUP? Have you any idea how often the DUP do not like what I do? Nearly every day of the week, so do not be ridiculous.
Mr. Nolan, Nelson McCausland tried to bring in the bedroom tax into Northern Ireland.
Bedroom tax was blocked before the welfare reform stalemate.
Yes, because Sinn Féin blocked it. Through a petition of concern, they had two petitions of concerns, and not one, but
Sinn Féin couldn't block it. It was already agreed.
That was blocked. Sinn Féin pulled the panel.
You're starting to wind me up
and
now.
You're starting to wind me up. You're sitting there chatting pure nonsense because you're getting Féin information through an earpiece. I've researched it. I know what I'm talking about. Somebody's just sitting telling you what they say. You have an editor or whatever, or backroom staff back telling you what they say.
No.
I research it. I read it.
You've read it wrong.
I'm not wrong.
You're clearly tired.
I'm not wrong. Nelson McCausland was going to bring in the bedroom tax into Northern Ireland, and Sinn Féin, bring on Sinn Féin. Bring on Sinn Féin and ask them. Don't sit there, Mr. Owen, something peddling.
The welfare reform bill, John.
The welfare reform bill.
Now, you're starting to wind me up.
And you're starting to wind me up.
The welfare reform bill that Sinn Féin blocked, the element of the bedroom tax was already stopped.
Yes.
It was already stopped.
Yes, but before that,
Are you about to take a tizzy?
Are you going to let me speak? In 2010, when the coalition government came into being, the bedroom tax come onto the mainland straight away. That was to come to Northern Ireland as well, and Nelson McCausland was going to implement it. He said, oh no, this has to happen, and he went to a conference where there was a different housing association,
and they told him
that there was not enough housing stock in Northern Ireland for people to simply move around. This isn't England. I live in Dunamana. I couldn't move into
Dunamina
because of our divided reality. We are a divided society. Now,
The man
would drive you insane.
No, I'm telling the truth and you don't like it. Sinn Féin blocked bedroom tax because Nelson McCausland was going to bring it in. That's fact.
I think the truth is that in the run-up to the the implementation of welfare reform before the Stormont House Agreement. I think both the Unionist parties and yes. Sinn Féin had committed themselves.
That's what I was trying to tell him, Malachy.
In my company and on radio with me, to opposing the bedroom tax.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to tell this man, but he won't listen.
Nelson McCausland was going to bring it on. Nelson McCausland was going to bring it on.
Nelson McCausland, you're obsessed with the man.
Well, the man was the minister at the time. That's why I'm obsessed with him, because he was the minister at the time.
I'm going to get a wee doll made of Nelson McCausland and send it up to you.
Well, I don't know what he's saying, because he's a great man for Ulster Scots, which is not a complete load of waste of money nonsense.
John, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very
good morning.
Much,
good
all
morning
the
to you.
Bye-bye.
Malachy, I'm sorry about that. Good morning to you.
No,
thank
that's
you.
Fine, but I just thought the poor man's blood pressure was going up and you should have had a bit more...
Never mind his blood pressure. What about my blood pressure? Julia Hartlepool, you don't have to deal with this in the mainland, do you?
No, I have to say, I found all of that utterly incomprehensible. Well, that infighting battle. I think we're forgetting the real thing, the real issue here, which is an issue that so many other people in Malachy in particular are so upset about, is the plight of homeless people. Look,
yes.
It is a nonsense to say we don't have a safety net. The reality is, it's like a mosquito net. You know, there's always going to be one that gets through. The reality is there are people who fall through. You can have as many benefits, as much help as you want. There'll be people who won't claim them because through their own issues that they've got. And we need to make sure we help those people. And I'm saying that giving someone a quid doesn't help them.
Julia,
but possibly getting them in the system will.
We've got to leave it there. Thank you very much, Julia and Malachy. Good morning.